Good morning, everyone. On my way over here today, I passed an advertisement in the subway that's been around a lot, but I never really read what it said, and it's an advertisement for a computer, a tablet computer called the Surface. I guess it's Microsoft's answer to Apple. And what caught my eye was the slogan, which was, "One device for your whole life." What could be cooler than that? And it occurred to me that in my talk today, that was really my intention, to give you one device for your whole life. I didn't stop by Best Buy, I'm sorry, but I think that this device really does fit the bill. And if we can really connect with it and connect with its deep meaning, in a way our Zen practice is completed. And the device I'm talking about is bowing. And the bow, as you know, plays a central role in our Zen forms. But as we also know, it's not only a form, it's also the sign of an interior state, a state of mind, an approach to living, an approach to existence. And oddly enough, this so-called deeper meaning and the fact that it's a form, they're not two different things. When we bow with full attention, it's all right there, and questions of form and depth and they just disappear. It's all right there in the bow. Dogen Zenji, according to Maizumi Roshi, and I would take his word on this, although I wasn't able to find the quote, Dogen Zenji once said, "As long as there is true bowing, the Buddha way will not deteriorate." That's pretty major. True bowing, not dipshit bowing. But what is true bowing? Well, Maizumi Roshi goes on to say, and I think he nails it, in bowing, we totally pay respect to the all-pervading virtue of wisdom, which is Buddha. And I would go on to say, we not only pay respect to it, but we acknowledge the reality that the difference between the all-pervading virtue of wisdom, which is the Buddha, and our own mind as it is, are not two different things. So we're paying respect and something to something that we revere and aspire to, and in that sense there's separation, and yet at the same time it's like, you know, paying respect to your nose. It's something which you are right at that moment. The The bow in Buddhist legend plays a very important role right at the very beginning. In fact, you can almost say that Buddhism started with a bow. Because if you remember the story, Shakyamuni had his great enlightenment and kind of didn't know what to do with it. He said, I don't know how this can be shared with other people. And as he was walking along the road shortly thereafter, he came upon some of his friends in the way, people who had been practicing alongside him for many years. And these friends of his were very disenchanted with him because he had abandoned the deeply ascetic practices which they thought were part and parcel of living an authentic spiritual life. You know, for instance, he drank milk. So they really didn't want anything to do with them. And as they saw him coming along the road, they were determined to sort of give him the cold shoulder. And yet, as they confronted him, they saw something in his eyes which was unmistakable. And they knew that whatever sins he had committed against the true way of spiritual practice, he had seen what they had been searching for so long. And quite spontaneously, upon making eye contact with him, all five of them they opened themselves, and he began to teach. He taught them the cause of suffering and the cessation of suffering, and the whole dog and pony show commenced from that point. Later on in his life, if you remember, again according to legend, he held up a flower on Mount Gudakutra. That was his Dharma talk. He held up the flower, and one of his disciples acknowledged it, not this time with a bow, but with a smile. And in legend, that was the first transmission of the Dharma. Well, we know from the teachings that this flower that Shakyamuni held up not only has never decayed, but is being held up moment after moment after moment. It's always being held up. The Dharma is being preached nonstop. The Dharma is being taught nonstop in every single nen, every single moment of our life. And the question is, how do we greet it? Our reaction can be the initial reaction of his friends. Oh, I don't like this very much. This isn't my idea of spirituality. Or we can recognize it for what it is, recognize ourselves for who we are, and literally and figuratively So what is it that keeps us from using this simple universal device? Well, as the teachings again tell us, the problem is we have these very stubborn human egos. We have a lot of ideas about what spirituality is, and even simpler than that, we think we know what a calm and peaceful mind is, and that we're supposed to get it. So when we have a lot of ideas that we're unwilling to throw away through putting our head down, we're constantly comparing and contrasting the Dharma that's being transmitted to us in this moment with our idea of the Dharma as we think it should be transmitted. The feeling that we're having in this moment compared and contrasted with the feeling we're supposed to be having. Our lives as they are at this moment compared to the lives we think we're supposed to be living. Usually it has something to do with being eternally healthy, happy, brilliant, loved by one and all. I mean, this is the kind of stuff our ego comes up with as the idea of what a good human life is. It's kind of pathetic when you put it right there on the table and look at it, but, you know, it's built in. It's built in by our conditioning. And it affects the way we practice. So every single one of us, I'm sure, has had the thought go through their minds many times, my Zazen isn't working. I'm not really into it. No. You know, my mind is too busy. I can't concentrate. There's too much noise. There's too much this and too much that. What a sad thing this is. What a sad fact of human life this is, when the flower of the Dharma is being held up in that very moment, and we spend our whole Zazen period pushing it away, rejecting it, writing a story about what that flower would be like if we could really only see it, if we could only realize it. Again, it would be something like, oh, it would be so groovy. My mind would be so peaceful. I'd be one with the whole universe. Over time, as our practice develops, we get better and better at taking Dogen Zenji's advice rather than going simply opening our hands or bowing and allowing the flower of the Dharma to come in and enlighten us and teach us at that moment. Not our idea of what it should be, but the living Dharma. The only Dharma that counts for anything. You know, it also, this resistance also affects our self-esteem and just the way we feel about ourselves. So, you know, in this culture, we're conditioned to divide ourselves up into little pieces. You know, oh, this is very good. I'm a good boy or girl. Oh, this is bad, I'm angry, I'm selfish, I'm greedy, very bad, very bad. And again, this is failing to appreciate the Buddha mind, failing to appreciate who we are, failing to appreciate our own minds and our own instincts and our own selves as the flower of the Dharma. Not as they will be one day when we're really advanced practitioners, but appreciating this mind, this body, who we are right now, with all the parts that we label good and all the parts that we label bad. In a way, this is what the Fusatsu ceremony is all about. The ceremony that has the most bowing, probably of any ceremony you can think of. It's practically nothing but bowing. And it begins with atonement. I atone. I am at one with my evil karma. And then we bow to the various energies that enliven our practice. We bow to them out of respect, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, Samantabhadra, the Bodhisattva of sincere persistence, Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And yes, we bow to pay our respects, but we bow because we are those things just as we are. They're not something we need to get. They're there right now, and we can connect with them at any time. But it does require leaving our opinions to one side. Nothing wrong with our having opinions, but just being present to who and what we are right now in this moment. When we truly bow, right there is both practice and enlightenment. We bow, and the Dharma is completely revealed. We arise, and we're ready. We're ready for the next moment, the next Nen. There's a koan about a bow. I think it illustrates very well both the kind of resistance I'm talking about and the possibilities that arise when we're willing to just let it all go. And this has to do with Elder Ting, who was a student of the founding Linzai master, Lin Ji. And Elder Ting asked Lin Ji, what is the great meaning of the Buddhist teaching? And Chi came down off his meditation seat, grabbed and held Ting, gave him a slap, and pushed him away. Ting stood there motionless. A monk standing by said, "Elder Ting, why do you not bow?" And just as Ting bowed, suddenly, he was greatly enlightened. What I like about this koan is there's a lot of truth about practice in it. You know, we hear, be one, bow to the Dharma, open your hands. And we can think it's going to be a lovely experience. We can think it's all going to be, rosebuds and lotuses and whatnot. But the reason we don't want to do it is because often it's some cranky old teacher coming down off his platform and slapping us across the face. You know, as Beckett said, more pricks than kicks. We don't like that. We spend so much of our energy in defensive operations so we never have to receive that slap. And we keep so busy with those defensive operations, we miss our lives. We miss who we are. We pass the Buddha right there on the road, and we don't even realize who it is. Another aspect of this koan is Ting standing motionless. So standing motionless can be a couple of different things. You know, it could be clueless, or it could be, and in this case I think it was, there it is. Oh. At that moment, Ting was in the state the Buddha was in when he had seen it and he just didn't know what the heck to do with it. There seemed no more reason for going north than going south, for going east or for going west. So his Dharma brother monk helped him out and said, "Elder Ting, why do you not bow?" And Ting bowed. Oh! And he became a very active teacher in his own right, a chip off the old block, threatening to throw people off bridges so that they could see the Dharma. Rinzai style, of course. Final thing I want to say about bowing is we hear a lot about dropping off body and mind. This was the phrase of Dogen's great enlightenment in China. And of course, it's natural for us to wonder what is it to drop off body and mind. And of course, the first thing we think of is some kind of blank blackness, you know, no body, no mind, just like in the Heart Sutra. That's sort of what I thought the Heart Sutra was all about. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. It must be, you know, that's what we think emptiness is at the beginning. You know, just black, nothing. No one home. Well, if we look at the story of Dogen's enlightenment, all that darn bow comes up yet again. So if you'll remember the story, his teacher, Ru Jing, was scolding one of the monks. They were sitting up, you know, late, and the monk was sleepy, and Ru Jing said, "Practicing Buddhism is dropping off body and mind. This is no time to sleep." And he hit the monk with a slipper. And when Dogen heard the phrase, "drop off body and mind," he got what he'd come for. And he went immediately to Ru Jing's abbot's quarters and offered incense. And Ru Jing said, "What are you coming in here offering incense in my quarters?" And Dogen said, "Body and mind have dropped away." Ru Jing said, "Yes, body and mind have dropped off." And Dogen said, "Don't approve me so easily." And Ru Jing said, "I'm not approving you so easily. Why do you say you're not approving me so easily?" Ru Jing said, "Body and mind have dropped off." And Dogen bowed. And Ru Jing said, "Dropping has been dropped." So when we come full circle, when we truly bow wholeheartedly with body, mind, and spirit, we end up with something quite ordinary. There's no Herculean effort needs to be made anymore. I must drop body and mind. I must drop body and mind. We just no big deal. The flower of the Dharma is revealed in this very moment. Nothing needs to be added or subtracted. Nothing needs to be realized except the life of this moment. So it turns out this constant bowing that we do in the Zendo is pretty serious practice, not just some stuffy form that we inherited from our Japanese teachers. It's a profound teaching that is available to us at every moment of our lives. Suzuki Roshi says, we should be prepared to bow even at our last moment. And Maizumi Roshi said, bowing and doing gassho is the state of being one with the three treasures. And he says, no big deal. Let us just make gassho. Let us just bow. Sentient beings.